At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
It's Labor Day, so of course we'll talk about labor. But it's also National Macadamia Nut Day, so we gotta talk about that too. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In New York, I'm Kristen Schwab, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Monday, September 4th. Thanks for listening. Today is a day as good as any to zoom in on labor. Specifically, the labor force. One highlight of the August jobs report, as we told you on Friday, was the labor force participation rate. That's the share of people working or looking for work. It rose to its highest level since the pandemic began more than 3 years ago. And this is an important piece of data to watch because it is a key component to the Fed pulling off a soft landing. More workers take pressure off rising wages. In August, gains in the labor force were largely driven by a group of workers whose participation suffered during the pandemic, women. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
Historically, women have participated in the labor force at lower rates than men. But in August, the gap shrank to just 10.5 percentage points, the narrowest it's ever been.
You know, men's labor force participation has been growing, but women's has been growing by just a tiny bit more.
Betsy Stevenson, an economist at the University of Michigan, says that's been a happy surprise because job losses and disruptions during the pandemic hit women workers much harder.
A lot of people, myself included, were really worried that the pandemic would knock these women off course and we would take decades to get back to where we were in 2019.
Women's overall labor force participation isn't quite back to what it was before the pandemic, but that's largely due to demographic change, says Lauren Bauer at the Brookings Institution. As the baby boomers age, a bigger share of the population is naturally retiring. But for so-called prime age women, 25 to 54, participation has exceeded its pre-pandemic high.
These are women who, you know, leave the labor force potentially to care for their young children. But now many more jobs have more flexibility with where the worker has to be.
Bauer says continuing to attract mothers to the labor force is crucial for economic growth as the population ages.
Prime age women, they are the biggest stock of potential workers, but they need support.
For the past 2 years, the federal government has been propping up the struggling childcare industry with tens of billions of dollars in pandemic relief. But those funds expire in September. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Now onto another growing part of the labor market, leisure and hospitality. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says employment in that sector continued to grow in August. Here's Marketplace's Lily Jamali on how employers in the hotel business are trying to gain an edge.
When Arslan Tafazzoli prepared to open the newly restored Lafayette Hotel in San Diego in July, his company, CH Projects, had about 4 weeks to staff up.
We did all of it. Fairs, friends, social media, you know, local media, every channel that we sort of had our disposal. We just put it out there.
The historic hotel, once frequented by Hollywood stars, has two restaurants and three bars, with more set to open soon, plus a bowling alley and a pool. Tafazzoli was able to hire 140 people to run it all by the grand opening. Part of the hiring pitch was about building an attraction, and not just for out-of-town guests.
Basically, making an amenity for San Diego and hopefully have people within the city that would support this place.
That kind of messaging matters to members of Gen Z, whom leisure and hospitality employers are keen to hire, according to University of Central Florida tourism professor Stephen Pratt. On top of good wages, benefits, and perks, Pratt says in a competitive labor market, some employers are differentiating themselves by conveying a bigger purpose.
To, you know, be an important part of the community, not just someone who's out there to, I guess, exploit or extract as cheap a labor as possible.
And the stakes are high. Pratt says lodging can make up as much as 70% of vacation spending. Cornell's Alex Suskin says the labor market in leisure and hospitality is still very tight, and not just for hotels.
It's just been a very, very slow recovery, getting people to want to go back to those kinds of jobs in the same way that they did before the pandemic.
Slow, but if the data's any guide, getting better. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Markets are closed today for the holiday, so instead, we're hitting the road. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. It has been what some people are calling a hot labor summer. Hollywood writers have been on strike for more than 100 days. Food service workers rallied on the Las Vegas Strip last month. Health workers are marching in Los Angeles today. We could go on and on. And even though Labor Day can feel like it's all about sales on mattresses or whatever, once upon a time, Labor Day was all about labor and worker solidarity. Allison Brantley is an associate professor of history at the University of Laverne in California, and she has the origin story of Labor Day.
What we now know as Labor Day was first celebrated on the 1st September of 1882 in New York City. For students of American history, you know the 1880s and 1890s are this period of massive expansion of capitalism and industry. There's a lot of wealth being created at the top. In those workplaces, immigrants and working class folks are increasingly turning to labor unions to build power. But there's a lot of tension with employers. There are tense strikes, there are violent strikes where people are killed on both sides, and labor leaders in the city decided they wanted to designate a day to honor labor's contributions to the city. And in particular, in 1882, they decided to hold this labor's holiday festival, is what they called it, on the first Monday of September, or September 5th, because that was the day that a major labor organization in the country, the Knights of Labor, was holding its annual convention as well. So they organized a festival that included a picnic and a parade, and it was deemed a huge success. So in this militant moment, in this tense moment, Labor Day parades end up being a really key moment of community gathering. Lots of people in the community can come together and recognize the power of labor, even if, like for women and children, they're not in unions, they're not hopefully working in factories. But Labor Day parades and festivals and picnics become a key moment every year to come together and honor that struggle and also look forward to another year of momentum and power building. By the early 1890s, 23 states across the country had also recognized the importance of labor's holiday and designated it a state holiday. But the federal government had not gotten to that point yet. In 1894, there's a huge strike of railway workers. It's known as the Pullman Strike. And President Grover Cleveland, at the same time as he's cracking down on strikers and trying to get this railway strike to end and for commerce to move forward, he designates Labor Day a national holiday. It could be seen as kind of this pandering gesture or a concession to labor because at the same time they're arresting folks. But I do think it highlights the importance of Labor Day as a moment of celebration, a day that was recognized by lots of people already. So Labor Day has changed a lot and not a lot over the years. Since the 1890s, there were always parades. But I think it ends up being kind of sanitized or loses a little bit of the exuberance in the context of the Cold War after World War II.
A challenge not, we hope, to be met and joined in battle, but to be faced and fought in the hearts and hopes of men.
Labor is under so much pressure during the Cold War to distance itself from communist traditions.
It is the challenge of ideas.
I think there's a lot of parallels between this particular moment of labor activism in 2023 and labor activism in the 1880s. Maybe a key lesson to be drawn from Labor Day of the past or Labor Day of old is that there's a lot of power in community support. And yes, it's great to support a strike online, but also, you know, maybe there's something to be said too for a big parade that demonstrates large-scale broad solidarity.
Allison Brantley there. She's an associate professor of history at the University of Laverne. Megan McCarty-Carino was telling us about women in the labor force and how they're bouncing back. Part of what held them back during the pandemic was access to childcare. Meanwhile, it's getting more expensive. A worker shortage is pushing up prices to, on average, anywhere from $900 to $2,500 a month, depending on the age of your child and where you live. That's not the case in Germany, where parents pay as little as $75 a month. The BBC's Leanna Byrne has more on how that works.
Children aren't cheap. In 2021, the average price of childcare in the US was just over $10,500 a year, according to the nonprofit organization Childcare Aware of America. But in Germany, it's about $1,500 a year, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Germaine Lovegrove works full-time in publishing and has twins in childcare in Berlin. She pays around $50 a month for care per child.
We have 8:30 to 3 p.m. childcare in a nursery where the twins are with 10 children. And there's two carers. They have a little dog. They have breakfast, lunch and dinner. They go out twice a day. They just have the best time.
So how can Germany provide childcare for such a low cost when in the US it works out at an average of just over $880 a month? Markus Bracht is co-founder and chief executive of childcare company Educare in Germany. He says subsidies from the federal government keep costs low.
Otherwise, it would be too expensive for parents. If you have only privately financed center, then the costs per month would be like for children under three, like 1,500 euros or more.
The US federal government also helps to fund childcare, but only for low-income families. There's also a federal limit of one carer for every four toddlers. Whereas in Germany, it's different in each state, ranging from four to eight toddlers for every adult. Christine Farquharson from the UK economic think tank, the Institute of Fiscal Studies, says staff-child ratios are a really important driver of costs.
And so if you relax those ratios, you're going to make it a little bit more cost effective because you can have the same number of staff looking after a greater number of children.
It can also be tough finding a childcare place in Germany. Sophie Ribstein is French and has been living in Berlin for the last 5 years. She couldn't find daycare for her two daughters, so opted instead for a childminder or Tagesmutter in German.
After like sending maybe 60, 70 emails to different kindergarten, I looked at this option of finding a Tagesmutter. And we got a spot and I decided then to go back to work when my baby would be 5 months.
But then she was told,
oh, she's still too small, we don't want to take her. So we had a spot, but they only started taking her from 10 months. And so we had to pay privately for a nanny during those months, which is a huge cost.
$870 to over $1,000 a month, to be exact. Sophie Ribstein says that means, like in the US, many German women put off going back to work until their children are older.
When it comes to women's rights, equal pay, etc., it does have a ripple effect.
According to a study by Germany's Institute of Economic and Social Research, 68% of working mothers opt to go part-time, compared to just 1.9% of men. I'm the BBC's Leanna Byrne for Marketplace.
Coming up,
I ran out to my desk and invented 8 more holidays.
I don't remember seeing that booth at the career fair. But first, let's do the numbers. U.S. stock and bond markets are closed today for the Labor Day holiday, so let's instead take a closer look at travel. The latest figures from the TSA show the holiday weekend kicked off with roughly 2,082,000 people passing through airport checkpoints on Friday. That's up from about 1,900,000 last year. If you're traveling by road, AAA puts the average price of a gallon of gas at $3.81, up from $3.78 a year ago. In Europe, markets closed lower. Britain's FTSE and Germany's DAX were off 0.1%. France's CAC 40 dipped 0.25%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kristen Schwab. Soccer, or football, depending on where you're from, is more popular than ever in the U.S. American MLS fans are younger and more diverse than fans of football, basketball, and baseball. That's according to a survey from Morning Consult. And during the recent Women's World Cup, the U.S. national team broke audience records, with viewership up more than 10% since the last tournament. With new interest in the sport comes new hobbies, which can turn into new businesses. Here's the latest installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is John Paul. I make footballs, or as you probably call it, soccer balls, and I'm based in St. Louis, Missouri. I started making footballs when COVID hit, actually. I bought myself some leatherworking tools just to keep myself busy during lockdown. Never really had any intention to make a ball specifically, just made myself a wallet, a pencil case, stuff like that. And then one day, just on a whim, decided to make a ball. And that ball was very bad, but I had a really good time doing it. So I tried again and made another ball and another ball. I feel like the ball is this underexplored medium for design. There's a few areas that I like to explore. One being materials. Very fun just to explore what kinds of different materials you can use to make a ball. And it, you can basically use anything. And it's always fun just to kind of see how well it performs. I started documenting my experiments on TikTok and Instagram basically from the very beginning. For the longest time I had basically nobody following me. It's my mum, my close friends, that kind of thing. But I decided to document the entire process of designing and making a ball from start to finish through like a short 60-second video. And just on a whim uploaded it one day to TikTok. And that content really resonated. So that's what I've been doing since then. I'll basically just work on an experimental ball kind of in public and just kind of present the whole thing in a very sort of condensed, dense 60-second video that includes the whole process, time-lapsed and everything. It's been a surreal year and a half, coming up in 2 years now. I wouldn't say it's been easy, but it has been very fun. It hasn't really felt like work at any point. It's always just been something that's been, you know, giving me energy, something I really wanted to work on, something that I just kind of became a little perhaps too obsessed with and couldn't put down. And I feel like I'm only just scratching the surface. So there's no specific end goal other than just to keep falling down this deep hole that I found and just seeing where it takes me.
John Paul Wheatley is a leather maker and football fan in St. Louis. We want to know what's going on in your economy. Tell us about it at marketplace.org/myeconomy. Today, of course, is Labor Day, but it turns out we have plenty of other things to celebrate on this Monday. It's also National Newspaper Carrier Day. Shout out to the people who get us the morning paper. It's National Mouth Guard Day to raise awareness for protective sports equipment. And my personal favorite, National Eat an Extra Dessert Day, as if I needed permission, but okay, thanks. These are not federal holidays like Labor Day, but they are celebrated and they make money. Marketplace's Maria Hollenhorst reports on why there's a holiday for almost everything.
If you've ever looked at a calendar and thought, who invented that holiday? It's possible it just came from Thomas Roy of Lebanon, Pennsylvania.
I invented Northern Hemisphere Hootie Hoo Day.
The premise of Northern Hemisphere Hootie Hoo Day is to celebrate the coming end of winter by going outside at high noon on February 20th and yelling,
Hootie Hoo!
I mean, it's not any weirder than Groundhog Day, right? About four decades ago, he mailed this idea to Chase's Calendar of Events, which publishes an annual guide to holidays, sporting events, and celebrity birthdays. And then he kind of forgot about it.
Until February 20th, I started getting calls. Hey, Roy, you're famous. You're all over the news. You're on the front page of USA Today. I'm like, what?
Newscasters had picked it up.
Of course, right away, I ran out to my desk and invented eight more holidays.
You are not going to get a day off of work for Northern Hemisphere Hootie Hoo Day or any of the dozens of other holidays that Thomas Roy and his wife Ruth have invented.
Bathtub Party Day, Get a Different Name Day.
No Housework Day.
Wave All Your Fingers at Your Neighbor's Day.
He's got a lot of these.
Blah, blah, blah day. A day to do all the things that everybody's been blah, blah, blah nagging you about.
Mark your calendar for April 17th if you want to celebrate that one. The Roys filed a copyright for their creations and said they've made a few $1,000s from greeting card companies and brands that wanted to use their holidays in marketing campaigns.
Purina for Answer Your Cat's Question Day or Pet Owners Independence Day, one of them.
The relationship between big business and wacky holidays goes way back. Just ask Marlo Anderson, a North Dakota entrepreneur.
It was just a personal blog for almost 3 years.
10 years ago, he started trying to track obscure holidays and their origin stories.
And it took over my life. It took over my office's life. You know, we get kicked off of WordPress.com because we had so much traffic coming to the website.
That site, National Day Calendar, now has 12 full-time employees, a mobile app, a podcast, and a TV show in the works. They have become the unofficial arbiter of national days and get about 30,000 applications a year for new ones. Companies sometimes pay thousands of dollars just to have them proclaim and promote a special day. And some spend a lot of money just to become part of a news cycle.
Checkers Rally restaurant franchise put this marketing campaign together to have me change National French Fry Day to the second Friday in July because Friday is Friday, right?
I mean, sure.
And I come to work one morning and there are like these wall drug signs up down Main Street that had these like five signs in a row. Hey, Marlo, don't you know Friday should be on Friday type of thing. And I'd go to coffee in the morning and they would have a 20-foot banner. Have your coffee first, but change French Friday to Friday. And I'm just like, this is insane.
But it worked.
Tomorrow's National Friday.
It's National French Fry Day, of course.
So here are seven different deals to help you celebrate.
You know, I hear that, I just cringe.
Nancy Gray studies brand management at Arizona State University.
But the person who runs our office puts a list up every day of what we're celebrating each day. Oh, did you know today's National Guacamole Day? And it's also National Strawberry Day. So, I mean, it becomes an opportunity to participate.
She says that we humans value experiences that take us out of our everyday lives.
Even if you're skeptical of this and you feel this tension, like, yeah, this is just for money, we're okay with those contradictions. We don't need to resolve those in our minds to have the satisfying consumption experience with a brand.
She says that holidays just make buying stuff more meaningful, no matter what it is you're celebrating. I'm Maria Hollenhorst for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, saw this in the Washington Post. The federal deficit is projected to double this fiscal year to $2 trillion, though this comes after a record deficit drop in 2022. This year's increase is unusual because a strong economy usually reduces the deficit, since spending means more businesses and consumers owe more in taxes. Economists say the unexpected surge is partly because of bigger interest payments and increased costs to Social Security, education, and healthcare, aka everything is more expensive, even for the government. Here's your moment of economic context on this big travel day. This one's from the Wall Street Journal. Some ports in the U.S. and Europe are starting to put limits on how many cruise ships can stop there. Local residents and governments in Alaska, Maine, and parts of Europe are worried about the environmental effects and the dependence on tourism. Tourists, can't live with them, can't live without them. Our daily production team includes Livy Burdett, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Sophia Terenzio. I'm Kristen Schwab. We'll see you back here tomorrow. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.